Straight Talk on WRHI is presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Now here's Manning Kimmel broadcasting live from Substation 2 on Cherry Road in Rock Hill with Straight Talk, selected by the South Carolina Broadcasters Association as the state's top public affairs program.
And good afternoon. Welcome into Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop for another edition of our Straight Talk program. Presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Anderson Griggs Investments at Old Town Rock Hill. Common sense, intelligent advice for conservative investors. You can find out more online at AndersonGriggs.com. And our thanks to Good Pharmacy, your hometown pharmacy, Ebenezer Road at Camden Avenue in Rock Hill. You remember the old TV program called Dynasty? That's what kind of reminds me of what we got here. We got the whole Oliver family. That is, all those who are involved with optometry, around the table. We have the patriarch, Bill Oliver. We have, Scott Oliver and David Oliver. All doctors, all part of Oliver Eye Associates. So, guys, thank you for being here with us today. So, with all that being said, we always start off with some introductions. So, Bill, you're the first one. You with me now? All right, I want you to tell me a little bit about you, if you would. Go ahead.
Well, number one, I'm retired and started practicing in Rock Hill in 1963. And 7 years later, Dr. Robert Dent Graham and I joined practices and built a building. And then some years later, I brought in my two sons, Scott and David.
Did you have any idea that your sons would be inclined to get into optometry when you were raising them?
Not really. They used to come to the office and clean, and perhaps that got them interested. But no, I had no idea they would.
So now you are officially retired. You're not practicing anymore.
I am not.
But you do some volunteer work with the Association of the Blind.
I do volunteer for the Commission for the Blind, South Carolina Commission for the Blind. And then I volunteer at what used to be the Free Clinic, the York County Free Clinic. It's now called Piedmont Community Health Care.
Right there on Oakland Avenue.
Oakland Avenue. And I want to give a shout-out to Kathy Greer, who is the executive director. To qualify for that, you must have no insurance. And Kathy has been diligent about obtaining the funds that will help treat people for diabetes and now eye care.
So one more question.
Yes.
How did optometry come into your field of vision? Did you have a father or a mother who was in optometry?
No, I had a very good friend in Burlington, North Carolina. I went to Elon University, which is just 7 miles from Burlington, and Dr. Virgil Mewburn got me interested. As a matter of fact, he flew me from Burlington to Rock Hill when I became interested in Rock Hill and helped me look around.
Now, this will be the last question. How did you happen to select Rock Hill?
I was taking my North Carolina state boards. I was going to practice in North Carolina. And during the boards, the president of the board asked me if I would want to work with him a little while in Charlotte. And in doing so, he mentioned I should go down and look at Rock Hill, and so I called, and I spoke with the head of the Chamber of Commerce, who was none other than Vernon Grant.
Oh, my gosh, you are going back.
And so we made a time to come and look at Rock Hill with Vernon Grant. He kept me 8 hours.
You had Icky Albright, too, right?
Yeah, I was looking for – well, I had made up my mind where I wanted to practice, and so – he took me to Icky Albright Realty.
Oh, yeah.
And he didn't have anything commercial at that time, so we found an old bus station that no longer exists. But my dad, I rented from Norman Hagee.
Oh, yes.
And but my dad came and helped me renovate that building, and that's where I opened.
How about that? Did you ever imagine Rock Hill would be what it is today?
No way. No way. When I began practice here, there were 27,000 people, four eye doctors, Now, what is the population? 80?
Oh, about 90,000, somewhere in there.
22 eye doctors.
You realize that we were right on the cusp of 300,000 people in York County.
I do. I realize that.
All right. It's huge. So, who is the old? Oh, here's the oldest guy, the guy here over here. So, you, Scott, tell us a little bit about your background.
Yep. I grew up in Rock Hill. I was born in Burlington, North Carolina. I moved down here in 63 when my dad moved here.
He brought you?
He brought me here. Oh, okay. And when I was a month old. And went to Rawson Road in Northwestern, went to Elon College at the time, Elon University now. Then had a degree in chemistry. I actually was going to go, I went to school with music. I was going to be a high school music director.
Right.
And was making poor grades in music and making A's in chemistry and said, okay, I need to switch my major. And then went to Southern College of Optometry, where my dad and also where Dent Graham went. And came back here in 1990, started practicing with them in 90.
Really?
Yeah.
So the fact that you were going to be pursuing a career in music, that didn't turn out well for you.
No.
I mean, did you sit down with your dad over here and say, tell me a little bit about this optometry stuff?
No, I knew what he did. I knew it offered him a really nice living. And I said, well, you know, high school music director is probably not going to do as well financially as an optometrist, but chemistry and biology came easier.
They did.
Yeah.
Whew. Don't ever put me in chemistry and biology. I'll go right down the tubes. All right. Well, then there's this last member of the dynasty here.
The dynasty.
Dr. David Oliver. Put that a little closer to you.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Tell us a little bit about your background.
Mine's fairly similar. Same thing. I was born and raised here in Rock Hill. Went to Lawson Road, Northwestern. Went to Elon as well. I mean, at this point,
do they have a whole wing there at Elon? The Oliver wing.
My youngest daughter is there now too.
Oh, so. Lord!
Third generation.
But I knew that I loved sciences. I was not as good at music as both of my brothers are. And in high school, I did well in chemistry. So that was a way to get into med school. At that time, our across-the-street neighbor was Dr. Don McQueen, and I wanted to be an orthopedic surgeon. And after many conversations with him and what he was telling me about the change of health care by the time I was going to be out of school, it was a little discouraging. You know, go all those years and maybe not ever own your own practice was something I thought about. So I talked to Dad. I always regret this, but he wrote me a letter, about an 8-page letter, I don't know if you remember it, and the pros and cons of being an eye doctor. And at that time, we didn't have quite the scope of practice that we do now to be able to treat all the eye diseases that we talk about on our other show. And even with that, I mean, it was a reality check. You're orthopedic surgeon, you're going to make a lot more money. You're going to be very busy. But this looked like more of what I wanted out of life, to have a good family and be with my family and still have a good career. That's how I...
And when you take a look at what's happened to healthcare, particularly the specialties that you're talking about, and managed care, having your own shop and being able to call your own shots makes a big, big, big difference.
That's a big difference for me. It is for Scott as well. Go in every day and you know it's yours and you know you have to put the effort into it, and that's, I think, we do a good job with that. We care about our patients, and we want them to come back to us like they're our family, and a lot of them are. We've seen them for me 35 years and Scott longer.
That's interesting.
I still see patients that are my dad's patients and that had seen him since 63 or 64. And it's every once in a while I'll get a patient in and I'll FaceTime my dad because they, you know, I haven't seen your dad. Is your dad, hey, they real sheepishly, yeah, is your dad okay? And I say, oh, yeah. And so I'll FaceTime him and dad will hit my dad's memory on patient's name. He can look at a face, tell them, ask how their kids are. Oh, I remember your husband, his name, and it just he does a really good job of memory.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
So when you started this, when you started your own shop, you went in with Dent Graham, is that
no.
right? No.
No, I was 7 years solo. And Dent Graham was 15 years solo. And we went to a meeting one night and discovered that both of us were looking for a partner. And from that point on, we made plans to build and start our practice together.
So you were together how long?
Over 40 years.
Over 40 years.
Yeah.
And Dent just passed away here recently, just a couple
100
months.
Years of age. That was old. One of the blessings that I have had in this practice, to practice with a good man, a very good man. And we had mutual trust, and it was just flourished into a really nice practice. And that's why I'm so happy to hear what my sons have fought the people who are trying to buy up practices and become a conglomerate. And they want to be a mom pop. And I hope that.
I mean, it's the same thing in our business. I mean, you know, being locally owned and locally operated makes a whole lot of difference.
Yes.
You're part of the community. You can give back to the community. You get involved in the community. When you have a third party that owns you from out there in Timbuktu, they call the shots, and it doesn't work that way. It doesn't work
exactly.
That way. So have you seen a lot of changes in this whole field of optometry? And remember, we only have about 15 minutes left.
I'm going to make it very brief. We, when I was in school, I happened to be president of the student body at Southern College of Optometry, and we formed a committee to get our curriculum enhanced, and we did. And that was going on in other schools of optometry, and other states were trying to enlarge their span of optometry, of their practice. And so when I graduated, we were not treating disease. First there's education, and then there's legislation. And by doing that, all 50 states are now not only diagnosing and treating disease, some are doing laser surgery.
Wow. So if you walk, and you have, when you walk back into Oliver Eye Associates and you see some of the technology that's in there right now, he's already shaking his head. I mean, the fact that you can put your little eye in that Optos machine and it looks in basically in your whole head. I mean, can you even fathom that from...
No, I can't. It's a wonderful, wonderful device. There are still those that have to be dilated. Not as many. And these two doctors spent more money on that instrument than I did on my home or my car. So it comes at a cost, but they've done it, and I'm very proud of them for doing it.
Well, and that technology, Scott, I mean, it's allowed you to do things that probably you didn't even imagine you were going to be doing when you came out of optometry school.
Oh, God, no. Yeah, the disease that we see in the retina, we can now take a picture of it, then take a picture of it with my iPhone, send it to a retina doctor, get a telemedicine consult while the patient's in my chair, and get a medical diagnosis and treatment within 30 seconds. It's unbelievable.
Unbelievable. So, David, now that you have this capability, well, let me step back. At what point in the optometry world did the regulations start to change so that you could start doing more stuff that used to be limited primarily to the ophthalmologist?
Right. 1993 is when we, as a state, got together, and we're pushing for the legislation, you know. Which is just, we had the training. Every optometry school trains every student the same way, but not every state was allowing you to treat, to be the full optometrist that you were trained to be. So you have to go through legislation, and we had a good grassroots movement. We had good people in the legislature at the time that were sympathetic to what we were wanting when we presented it to them, and it passed in 1993. Which is a therapeutic bill. So that was, we were already held to a standard of, you've got to be able to diagnose all these diseases. You just can't treat them. So diagnose it and leave the office and send them to somebody else. So there's a plenty of eye disorders out there that we are very well capable of treating. We can't do laser to the back of the eye for somebody who's bleeding and retina surgery and cataract surgery, and we don't want to do that. Optometrists want to do a primary care. Yes, we like to do glasses. Yes, like we like to do contact lenses. But it goes a whole lot further than that, to be able to take care of their entire well-being by looking into the eye and treating them on the spot, like Scott said, instead of having to them, oh, you got a bleeding in the back of the eye. We're going to send you over here. It's going to take 2 weeks to get in or longer. And the whole time they're suffering when now it's more instantaneous. And that came through legislation.
Was that a straight uphill battle? I mean, yeah.
You know, one of the things and I cannot remember who the lieutenant governor was at the time, but one of the things that he said that was very shocking to me was, this law is not going to get passed because of its merits. Because it can be the best thing in the world for everybody. It ain't going to be passed in this state because it's good for everybody. You got to fight the people who want to keep you down is really what it comes down to. There are people out there that do not want us to treat.
The one thing that has come out of all of this that is wonderful, though, the patient care. The patient is the recipient of better care from all kinds of eye doctors. And what has really changed is the relationship of optometry and ophthalmology. We now work hand in hand with these ophthalmologists who do cataract surgery, retinal surgery, and it's become a much better atmosphere for the patient.
Obviously it has. It's taken time to do that, but it's all worked out. So we got to take our mid-program break. This is the highlight of the show, by the way, where we're going to talk about we're going to thank Founders Federal Credit Union for making this show possible, live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop. Also, Anderson Graves Investments in Old Town Rock Hill. Common sense, intelligent advice for conservative investors. You can find out more online at AndersonGraves.com. And our thanks to Piedmont Medical Center, a community built on care. You can find out more about them online at PiedmontMedicalCenter.com. All right, we know what we do here. Fresh subs and salads. We do it 6 days a week. We got a bunch of newbies around the microphone, including the one and only Dr. Bill Oliver. So what we do here, Bill, is we say the white letters at the count of three. Are we ready now? One, two, three.
Slice. Guard.
Back after these words.
If it's 12:30, it's Straight Talk on WRHI.
Love our subs? Want to find the fastest way to get here? Just say, hey, Siri, take me to Substation 2 in Rock Hill.
Substation 2 on Cherry Road in Rock Hill, and it gets 4 stars on Yelp.
Even faster, order online at mysubstationii.com. Cherry Road across from Winthrop.
Now open, the new Piedmont Medical Center, Fort Mill, featuring personalized and comprehensive obstetrical services, 24/7 emergency care, and skilled surgeons who know the importance of getting to know you and your family. Piedmont Medical Center, Fort Mill, providing care for the Fort Mill community by your local community. Care that feels like home, close to home. Learn more at PiedmontMedicalCenter.com/Fort Mill.
Finally, there's a rising rate you can get excited about. For a limited time only, 15-month certificates and IRAs at Founders Federal Credit Union have reached super levels. A $500 deposit is all it takes to make these rising rates work for you. Hurry on over to foundersfcu.com/superrates today to see just how super these rates are. Terms, conditions, and restrictions apply. Membership qualification required. Federally insured by NCUA.
When disaster strikes, one of the most important things is getting life back to normal. A little compassion can go a long way. Paul Davis is here for you. Paul Davis is committed to handling any property damage with exceptional care, because what we do is more about property. It's about people. We have the training and expertise necessary to completely restore your property fast. For all your cleanup and restoration needs, call the experts at Paul Davis Restoration at 329-1140 or find us online at pauldavisrockhill.com.
If you want to find the best subs and salads, tell Siri, take me to Substation 2 in Rock Hill.
Substation 2 on Cherry Road in Rock Hill, and it gets 4 stars on Yelp.
Even faster, order online at mysubstationii.com. Cherry Road across from Winthrop.
Straight Talk continues now on WRHI. Brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders.
And back we are here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop. We have the Oliver dynasty around the table, Dr. Bill Oliver, Dr. Scott Oliver, Dr. David Oliver. We're talking optometry. And you know, Bill, you have not been part of this conversation, but we're going to blame this on you.
Okay.
Because you're the first, you're the oldest optometrist here. One of the things that I've talked to Scott and David about quite extensively is why hasn't the optometric world done a better job on telling people that they need to get an annual optometric examination? Just like the dentists have taught us, every 6 months, by God, you get in there and get your teeth checked. Doesn't make any difference whether they feel good or look good. Get them checked because you don't know what's going on behind there. And these guys have been, you know, talking about this regularly for the last couple of years on their weekly program, Watch Your Eyes. But why hasn't the Optometric Association gotten the message? They've got to get out there.
I think, by and large, they have gotten the message. And in certain states, that message has gotten out. It's really up to the optometrist, the practitioner, to say, okay, patient, you've got this and going on in your eye, you need to come back. But as an organized group, American Optometric Association is trying their very best to get people in annually. They put out a lot of media on that.
Well, if they have, I sure haven't picked up on it, so go ahead.
Well, the other part of it is when our father was in practice, full going, he put four kids through college. I won't even tell you what the eye exam cost back then, but there was no insurance. It is more than 80% managed care vision insurance, which reduces the fees that we would normally get. And most of them, well, they can have an eye exam, some of them once a year. A lot of them, they won't pay for an eye exam, but every 2 years.
Really?
So even the insurances aren't really promoting it the way they should.
That's amazing because when it comes to dental care, you know, you've got that in there.
Yeah, it's built in.
I don't get it. I don't get it because I've heard too many stories, particularly from you two guys, about what regular optometric examinations have found. And my God, I mean, how many times have you said, Scott, people think just because they can read Charlie's menu board here
right.
that their eyes are okay?
Yeah, it's amazing how many people think reading an eye chart is an eye exam. It's not. You got to look inside. You got to look with a microscope. You got to look inside the retina. You got to look at the general health. But David was right as far as the insurance. It's amazing how many people come in and say, well, my insurance won't let me come in but this amount of time, or my insurance won't let me get this pair of contact lens or this pair of glasses. And I don't care what your insurance is. This is what you need. And if they decide they don't want to do that, then that's their decision. But it's frustrating sometimes.
I bet you it is frustrating.
Yeah.
So, other than getting on this program and on your weekly programs and continuing to repeat that message over and over and over and over again, I guess unless your state association, let's say, were to get a bunch of optometrists saying the same thing across the state of South Carolina, maybe that's what needs to happen.
Well, I think in some ways it does. We have once a year in February, there's a group that meet the legislators in Columbia, and we talk about a lot of the concerns that we have. And I bet every year it's brought up about what insurance companies are. And it's not just optometry. I mean, how many times have you gone to your primary physician and, like, you need to be on this heart medicine, and you get a call back saying, oh, your insurance doesn't cover that. You have to use some other one. When that's the one that the doctor picked for you and is probably appropriate for you. So it's not just happening in optometry. It's happening in medicine, period.
Yeah. And exactly along the same lines that we were talking about, we have this managed care, and you can see how they're dictating what has to be done, what hasn't been. And if you were owned by somebody, you'd have that problem be just exasperated. Okay, so we only have a few minutes left in the show. I'm going to start with you again. What's your name? Oh, Bill. Yeah, okay.
Thank you.
What do you see as the biggest challenge facing optometry today?
Well, I really do, going right back to what you were talking about, the biggest challenge to the patient care is getting them in to have their eyes examined. We've all know that some people have their very first examination when they're 45 and they can no longer read up close. 100% of the people on earth get to that point. But to get them people knowledgeable of what can happen to the eye, inside that eye, way before that, is a big challenge. The other challenge is more of a challenge to the individual optometrist having the equipment in his office that will help him do the job and find these eye diseases.
Right.
And find out what they need in the way of glasses. And the challenge is coming up with the money to do it, because it is not cheap.
Oh, it's not cheap.
Yeah.
But if you don't keep investing in yourself,
you got to do it.
You got to do it. Mm-hmm. Same question to you, Scott.
Insurance is we have a love-hate relationship with insurance. We love that we have more accessibility to more patients because they're on different managed care plans. But we are a lot of times handcuffed by what we can do, when we can do it, how we can prescribe medicines, and not treat the patient with the medicines they need because the insurance doesn't want to cover a tier one medicine.
Well, and I think the patients need to recognize that limitation and ask themselves, okay, if he's recommending this, why don't I want to pay a little extra out of my own pocket to get it? Because you're not making any money off the prescriptions, right? You're just trying to give them the best thing you can get. Go ahead, David.
Well, I think the two biggest ones that we're seeing now that we've talked about in our other show is myopia, nearsightedness, and trying to find those kids that start earlier, getting them in, getting their glasses. We now have treatment plans with contact lenses to slow down the progression of nearsightedness. And then number two, this is a digital world, and we're looking at our devices. My passion is this whole umbrella dry eye issue. That's a big problem, and I spend more time talking about that than any other eye disease that we generally see.
Yeah. And I tell you, if you want to hear more about these particular topics, just go to WRHI.com and pull up the Watch Your Eyes tab, and they're all there, left and right. I do want to leave about 60 seconds left. This guy, Bill, you got a very interesting hobby that has nothing to do with eyes. It has to do with time. You love watches, and you've been collecting watches like forever, right?
I'm not a collector. A collector is someone who chooses a certain brand of watch and collects like Bulova or Movado or something like that, and just gets all of those that they can and adds to their collection. I am someone who owns a lot of watches. Most of them are pocket watches. All of them work, and I have a number of them, and I am happy with every one of them. I started when I was 19. I'm 86 years of age, and I have a lot of watches.
Do you work on them yourself?
Oh, no. The two people who helped me more with my procuring all these watches were Sherman Sessoms, who is now passed, and Norman Hagee, now passed.
Oh, yeah.
Norman Hagee had one of the finest collections of watches, and he passed them down to his son.
Oh, yeah. How about that, Mike? Yep, I know him well. Well, listen, Olivers, Bill, David, Scott, thanks you all for being here.
Thank you for the service you've been providing
to York County for all these years, and look forward to you continuing to do that.
Thank you. Let's do.
And that's going to wrap up our Straight Talk program live from Substation 2. Cherry Road across from Winthrop, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax here with Founders and by Anderson Griggs Investments in Old Town Rock Hill. Common sense, intelligent advice for conservative investors. You're going to find out more online at AndersonGriggs.com. Now, since you're not a regular listener, Bill, and I don't know why you don't do that, but that's okay. You're retired, and we'll let that speak for itself. We do this one more time, right? We tell everybody what we do here at Substation 2. It's fresh subs and salads, 6 days a week between 10 in the morning and 9 o'clock. When I tell you three, then we go. Not before. Are you ready? All right, here we go. One, two, three.
Slice, slice, slice. Guard, guard, guard.
Have a wonderful day. We'll see you on the radio tomorrow. Bye.